Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Councillor Donna Cooney. Donna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Good to speak to you.
Congratulations on your re-election. It's the first time I've spoken to you. It was a tough it was a tough area. And now today your leader, Eamon Ryan, who you've known for many years, a thoroughly decent man. I think anyone who ever met him would agree with you. Are you sad to see him to see him stand down as leader?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it. You know, I really just found out like everybody else. I mean, he's been a long term as leader, and I thought I knew he wasn't going to run. I was thinking he wasn't going to run next time round. You know, I was just sort of suspected that. And the timing, I think, came as a surprise to me. I wasn't aware that he was going to, you know, go like that. So it's, I suppose I'm taking it in like anybody else. I have known him a long time. I've known him from when I was on Dublin City Council at the late 90s when he was co-opted on to replace John Gormley. So, and even before that, I knew him, you know, It is, you know, but he is a very decent human being. He's not necessarily, you know, of the political type of, you know what I mean, as a sort of, he wouldn't be, wouldn't have thought of himself as being a career politician, but he I think he, you know, he was had a very sort of statesmanship like way about him, you know, and he's very much admired, I think, around Europe for his role. And I suppose he went on a good note with the nature restoration. You know, maybe he just thought he got that across the line. That was a way to go now and leave it time for the next person.
Now, Donna, as one of the longest serving Green councillors, in the last few minutes you tweeted, boycott Ryanair until they stop attacking climate activism and people that choose to cycle. Now, this is on foot of a tweet that Ryanair put out on when Eamon announced that he was resigning. How would you characterise that tweet from Ryanair?
It was very divisive, and you wouldn't expect that at a time like this to come out. I know that there was a spat, you know, and they were doing this sort of to and froing, and they do go for that type of advertising. I mean, they don't like to pay for advertising, so they like to use that. That's always been their tactic, you know what I mean, to sort of, you know, get sort of on the airwaves or to get notoriety or whatever. I mean,
and
you know,
are you serious when you say boycott Ryanair?
I just felt so annoyed that I put that out because I thought, like, why are they going with the boycott bikes enough people trying to different modes of transport we all use.
Well, if we bike,
that cycle also fly. I just thought Ryanair like having an attack on people that cycle was just, you know what I mean, because we all like do different modes of transport, and some of us like drive and cycle and take buses and trains and planes.
Well, you're being very, you know, and I know you are, but you're being very reserved about the tweet because it was published, as you say, by Ryanair within minutes of your party leader and the leader of the Green Party and the Minister for Transport, etc., announcing that he is not only resigning, but he's also on stand the next election. And he, one of the things he did say,
I think it was very bad timing, Joe. I really do. And I think, you know, it's on a personal
level, somebody
has put that amount of time and commitment in, and to go out with something like that, it was in very bad taste. Very bad taste. And
it was nasty.
Okay, I'll use that word.
Let me read out the tweet which prompted you to say we should boycott Ryanair until they stop attacking climate activism. Now, the problem is if we boycott Ryanair, we'll never see outside the island again because Aer Lingus are gone, will be gone if the strikes go ahead. This is the Ryanair tweet, or X, whatever they call it, just minutes after Eamon Ryan announced his resignation after many, many years of public service. He jumps before he was pushed in the general election. A failed Green minister quits. This is from Ryanair. Dublin world's second slowest city for drivers. Dublin, Europe's only traffic-capped airport. And Green Party fails Irish tourism. Vote hashtag flights, not bikes.
It's not even correct. There are other cities that have caps like Amsterdam. You know, I mean, it's not even correct. It's like, you know, full of mistakes. It was put out by their main Twitter account. You know what I mean? I just don't even understand how they can actually do something like that. You know, it's just... divisive.
Well, Michael O'Leary, as recently as yesterday, has called your party leader and a government minister an idiot. Yeah. An idiot.
Yeah, well, I think he needs to look in the mirror himself, you know. Just because you're a successful businessman and you're making money doesn't give you the right to do exactly what you like, you know, in terms of using your own the social media of a company, which I assume is a company. It's not, you know, like, is he directing the social media to get into this spat as well? Personal gripe that he has against people that want, are campaigning for climate action. And that simply is. I mean, nobody's saying that there weren't any.
Do you know how many followers that account has, where Ryanair called saying your leader jumped before he was about to fail in the general election, the worst minister, the worst record? It's nearly 1 million followers.
Yeah, and then he was complaining that we were able to, if they were so worse, he was complaining, why did the Greens manage to wield so much power as well? So, I mean, that's just, you know, it's a bit of a contradiction.
And they're unrelenting,
maybe
Donna.
Maybe we're too successful for his likes.
Well, Donna, since you've been on the programme, which is now 7 minutes, they've tweeted this in the last 2 minutes. This is Ryanair. They have a screen grab. The podium is in place at Leinster House, but no sign of Eamon Ryan just yet. This is obviously before he came out at 1:02. And Ryanair have retweeted that, and they say no sign of him either at Dublin Airport for the last 4 years. The Greens.
Oh, and then they came out earlier and said how it was great that they managed to facilitate them in relation to the UEFA, you know, the final. So I mean, it's a total contradiction.
Okay, here's another tweet. This is before your tweet calling for a boycott of Ryanair, but this is 1 hour ago. Greens keep recycling the same old rubbish. This is on the official Ryanair account, nearly 900,000 followers. Failing ministers, failing Irish aviation, failing Irish tourism, failing Irish jobs, and then a photograph of the Minister Catherine Martin, who must be in the running to replace Eamon Ryan, and then Eamon Ryan with their dunce's cap on both of them.
This is the same man that like got himself a taxi before the derail so that he could drive in the bus and taxi lanes, isn't it? You know, I mean, some people think that they're above everybody else, you know.
And you know what they've also tweeted now in the last few minutes? This is Ryanair. We would also offer free seats for failed Green ministers, but we're capped at Dublin Airport. So get on your bike, clown emoji. And the photograph is that infamous photograph of your leader, Eamon Ryan. Remember when the doll used to sit in the conference centre during COVID and he fell asleep? Now, I've no issue with that, because I've no doubt that most government ministers, as he said, work almost 24/7, 365. But he dozed off.
He's likely in a time of a national crisis to have been working through the night for a couple of nights, and by that stage he was having a bit of a 40 winks. You know what I mean?
Who hasn't done it? But the fact that Ryanair are putting out this photograph of Eamon Ryan asleep on the day that he announces. That he basically, and I don't think anyone would challenge it, wants to spend more quality time, or some quality time, in terms of what he's been doing for the last couple of decades with his growing family. I think that's nasty.
It is nasty. But I mean, that's the sort of nasty, and that's the sort of divisive politics that I don't want Ireland to be, you know, and we never got personal like that with people. You know, I mean, you can have, you know, it's a democracy, you can have difference of opinions and you can have robust debate, but this sort of, you know, personal nasty attacks and divisive polarising, it really isn't, you know, it isn't what we've done in Ireland before. And I don't like that form of you know, and companies getting so involved, you know, commercial companies getting so involved with, you know, attacking a particular political party. You know, it just...
Okay, David.
I mean, it just doesn't... Yeah, David, really David. Isn't.
Well, Don, I don't know what your blood pressure is like, but if you do if you do take blood pressure tablets, have them on standby. They've tweeted again since you come on. And
oh,
I don't
God.
Know. I don't know where this photograph. Sorry, I don't know when this photograph is taken. But it's somebody standing outside government buildings with a makeshift cardboard poster saying "Flights, not bikes." But it's a bit of a giveaway because the person—it's a young woman from the back. The person who's holding up the sign has Ryanair admin staff written on the back of her. So he sent some of his staff into government buildings to hold up a banner saying "Flights, not bikes." This was, hang on, this was 7 minutes ago.
So okay. Are Ryanair saying that they don't want anybody that cycles to be a customer of theirs? I mean, considering that it's increasing and, you know, the numbers of people that cycle, and somebody's got at least somebody that cycles in their family, you know, at some time, rather be it for leisure or for commuting or kids cycling to school, he doesn't want any of them. He just wants, you know, no people that use a bike to take a Ryanair flight. That's what I was going on. I was thinking, is that really what he's saying, you know?
Okay. There's no point in me asking questions like who's going to be the next leader because you say it's too early. Is that what you'd say, Donna?
I would, because okay, I actually haven't. I have no idea at this point who's going to put them
down. Don't waste your breath. You're going to need it. But you're calling. You've said it clearly. You want a boycott of Ryanair because of these nasty tweets. This is, well, are you standing over the word nasty?
I think the timing is nasty. You put nasty, but I'd say that they were on. They weren't. They're just not. I don't even use the word nasty, sort of lightly. So I just say, yeah, they weren't. They're very inappropriate, and not the type of thing that you should
now,
be putting out.
As Patrick Kavanagh said, everything in the world. In the form of an epic, everything is local. And we have Dermot Brady, who's a butcher in Fairview in Dublin. Now, Fairview in Dublin, for people outside the capital, is near Croke Park, near Fairview Park. The concerts there at the weekend, CMAT, incredible. The Corona is absolutely unbelievable. Great concerts. But Dermot Brady has contacted us and Patricia Brophy has contacted. Dermot, what is your problem with what's happening in Fairview in Dublin?
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good.
My problem, Joe, is that the bus stops have been taken away from Anzey Bridge Road and other bus stops as well. There's been four bus stops taken off the routes. And it's to make it more accessible for people to get in and out of town, not less accessible. The other problem I have, Joe, is where the bicycle lane is placed, where the cars are parked. The bicycle lane is inside that.
Okay.
So my question is, on a health and safety issue, how does somebody take their shopping or a child or a baby out of the car safely without obstructing bicycles, either manual or...
I'll come back to that in a sec because they're known as floating. Bus stops. They're bus stops are a new phenomenon in Ireland, a relatively recent phenomenon in the UK, and very controversial in London after a number of serious accidents involving cyclists and pedestrians. But we'll come back to that in a sec. Dermot Brady of Brady's Butchers. What are you saying? There was a bus stop directly outside your shop, and now it's gone.
Yes, there was a bus stop down the road from the shops on Anzey Bridge Road. There's approximately 10 shops there.
Yeah.
And we had a bus stop that people got off to avail of the services of our area here.
Yeah. And those bus stops have been there for decades.
Them bus stops have been there a millennia, yeah.
And why was, when did you discover there it was gone?
I discovered it was gone last Saturday.
And what's there instead, like, in place of it?
The roadworks are coming to completion
already,
and you know we expect the services to be reinstated. There's a hedge there now on the opposite side of the road, on the Fairview Park side of the road.
Okay, so
there's a hedge where the bus stop used to be,
and the bus stop's gone.
The bus stops are gone. Disappeared.
What effect would that have on your business? Which I don't know how you... I know you're great, great butchers, but I don't know how you survived in the last 2 years. I know Damien Duggan you had to pack it up in the jewellers.
Yes, absolutely. Damien was having his best year ever. And when the roadwork started, he realised that he just couldn't go on.
Okay, Donna, Donna, you're very active. You're very pro-cyclist.
I'm pro-local business. I support local business. In fact, I was down around talking to all the shops there last Friday. Lovely new laundrette, eco laundrette there where Edges, hardware was.
That's right.
We're going to rename Edges Corner there. There's a lovely new plaza in front of it. Brady's has got parking and they've retained the parking in front of Brady's. And they've given space so that when the car door is open, you won't knock in because you can have a nasty accident for both the driver and the, you know what I mean, and the in the vehicle and for the cyclist if you don't leave enough space. So the designs are not the same similar designs to some we've seen in the past, you know. And in terms of the bus stop, they were removed, the bus stop in the designs pre to 2019. We got some of them back in North Strand. They won't have shelters because there just isn't the actual room to put in the shelters, but they will have seating and a bus stop.
Yeah.
And the next bus stop to Brady's would be just outside the pub there, so just past Edges Corner on that side of the road. And the other one, which is where I had my big poster during the election, is just at Fairview Park there with a lovely shelter. And the thing about it now is you can cross that road on either side to Edges Corner, much simpler now with the new design. It's a simple, quick little, used to have to go across and, you know, wait in different islands, you know, to cross over the road there. And it was very difficult, particularly for people with, you know, mobility issues or, you know, or buggies or people using a
In fairness, now, one of the reasons why that crossing would be much easier is that family cars are barred. It's a cul-de-sac. You cannot go through Fairview. You cannot go the cars cannot go down that stretch where you're talking about. They're diverted.
Oh, but they will be. They're going to be back open going through North Strand.
Well,
in
fairness,
completed.
Donna, where it is one of the biggest arteries into the city. The Holt Road,
Let me finish.
The Holt Road, the Clontarf Road, back out to Holt and Port Marnock and all that direction.
And the Mount Hyde Road,
They all funnel into.
They do,
so Coolock, Braheny, Colester, they all funneled, practically half the north side funneled up to 2 years ago into three lanes and a bus lane and a cycle lane in Fairview. Fairview was turned into a cul-de-sac 2 years ago. The family motorist was told to get lost basically and go down and through this little laneway past Kirwan's Undertakers. That was four lanes. It's gridlocked every single morning because people now have to go down the Alfieburn Road. Yeah. If you do attempt to actually go down through Fairview, you'll get a parking fine and three penalty points. And the three lanes that was open to car family motorists will now be reduced to one lane, and what is the busiest intersection in the city.
There's still two on the way. There's still four. So there'll be a bus, dedicated bus corridor on either side.
And there always was.
The road.
Yeah.
And when you got down to North Strand anyway, it had narrowed. So the thing is to bring people as efficiently spine, the H2 spine, all the down the Howth Road. You've got the buses in the Malahide Road, you've the buses, the 130 in the Clontarf Road, all going down through Fairview. And you have to move them efficiently through. Through Fairview. So and I think that was the main objective. Yeah, and a continuous pavement
still,
all the way.
Yeah, but it's still
so people don't be going up and down dips and things, you know, when they're walking or in their wheelchairs. So
was there any hope for Brady's Butchers?
Ah, yeah, but they'll be opening the road back up through North France.
Okay, so
Dermot,
hang on, Donna. Dermot, what are you?
I would hope. Shop locally,
yeah, okay.
You know?
Well, I'm in favour of that. If you can get an excellent leader shop, I'll come to the floating cycle lane in a sec. Dermot, what are you complaining about?
Joe, the health and safety is my primary concern here. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the locality's safety that I have on top of my mind. I mean, the footpath is 6'9" wide.
Mm-hmm.
The cycle lane is 5'7" wide. Okay? Now, there's 28 inches.
What?
There's 28 inches.
Mm-hmm.
From the cycle lane to where the car is parked, 28 inches. My question is, how does somebody remove their goods from the car safely without being a danger to themselves or an oncoming cyclist? I need a health and safety adjudicator to have a look at this.
Mm-hmm.
And to pacify me that it's safe for me to do my business around here, and it's also safe for customers and the locality.
I don't think there's any harm in doing that. I think, you know, if the engineers had come down, let's actually just, you know, I always think do practical things like that. I'm sure they've looked at it, but maybe, you know, it can be even more improved, you know, on the buffer between the, you know,
Donna,
the cycleway can be wider.
28 inches.
Yeah.
I'd go down there with a car, like a big family car,
and see if you can do the platform.
But you're against.
Yeah.
Like,
a person has a platform for taking a baby out of the car. They've 28 inches, and then when they turn around, there's electric bikes and scooters and bicycles coming up against them. And, you know, like, let's face
facts. They're going to do
Donna,
you have to let Dermot speak. Seriously,
I'm
conscious that I raised most of the questions, so that unbalance your time.
No, you're fine.
Dermot, go ahead.
A lot of the year, there's restricted light, you know, from 4 o'clock on in a winter's evening. Some cyclists have their bikes well lit up, but others are wearing black. People literally won't see them, and the next thing is there's a collision.
Yeah, but Dermot, Donna, this new phenomenon of the floating bus stop, and just to explain it to people, because of the introduction of cycle lanes are beside the pavement, so the bus stop has to be, you walk across the cycle lane onto a small island, as they're calling it, and that's where the bus stops. Now, invariably, when you're waiting on a bus, you are extra vigilant, and there are lines on the cycle path. So when you're waiting on a bus, you're inclined to be safer. But when you get off the bus, which is what's happened in London, serious injuries to a number of pedestrians, when they get off the bus, they're not conscious of the fact that they're landing on a floating bus stop island, and they then have to walk across the cycle path. They invariably don't look in the correct direction, and that leads to accidents. What about Dermot's point there?
And there's going to be a lot more education around this, and the bus islands that we have are not the same design as the ones in London, and that needs to be, you know, so when people are looking at things that have happened in London, it's not comparable to us. Ours are much wider, and we have proper crossing points, we have the rumble strips for the bicycles to slow down, and, you know, and I think people also need to know that they will stop and that the pedestrian has right of way. So all that information needs to get out to people.
You're saying a pedestrian has right of way on a cycle path?
Crossing the cycle path. The pedestrians now have right of way on the junctions with the roads going across.
So if there's cars, must give way to the pedestrians. Just to be clear.
Pedestrian is king, you know, in this equation.
Pedestrian is killed. You're saying if I go across a road at any spot, I can walk across a cycle path at any spot and I have right of way. A pedestrian.
No, you cross. It's safer to cross at the crossing. Visually impaired can feel the textured thing.
Yeah, I know.
That's a crossing. And also,
so you only have right of way on a cycle path, a pedestrian, if the lights are with you.
Well, some of them have lights. Some of them just don't have rumble strips to close. So
I've never seen. I've never seen a cyclist stop for a pedestrian on a cycle.
I did it the other day, Donna. I mean, I do it all the time.
Donna, you cycle around Clontarf. You were a brilliant permanent fixture in Clontarf, with your multicoloured high Nelly bike. It's gorgeous. With your basket with flowers. In it, you're an addition to the place, so I don't think you could be. You're not exactly on a high speed, lycra filled titanium bike flying up and down past the bull wall. You're not, Donna. And you were never. In fairness to you, you were never going. And this is a credit to you. You're never going at a speed that would upset people. Patricia Brophy. Patricia, good afternoon. You are the widow of the. Well, I presume you're now the owner of Brophy Opticians. In Clontarf, what do you think of the disappearing bus stops, Patricia?
Good afternoon, Joe, and thank you for taking the call.
Yes.
And before I say anything, I would like Donna to listen carefully to what I have to say.
Okay.
Because I feel Donna is out of touch with all due respects to her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, John Brophy Opticians have been practicing in Fairview for 60 years.
Okay.
The practice is now taken over, carried on by Helen and Teresa Brophy, the two daughters. Now, during that time, Anslebridge Road has been served by 15 major bus routes,
mm-hmm.
and also served with bus stops prior to our coming. That was prior to 60 years.
Okay.
There were two bus stops there. Now, to our disbelief, now the two bus stops on Anslebridge Road have been taken away,
mm-hmm.
and a hedgerow planted in its place. The nearest bus stops now available to Anslebridge Road are near the up and over bridge,
mm-hmm.
in Fairview, and the fire station in North Strand.
Oh, that's a big gap, yeah.
Now, which were always in situ.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing new had been put in. Now, the demographic of the area also is our elderly people,
mm-hmm.
and it's also quite built up, and it's certainly going to cause hardship for them. Now, this is detrimental to all businesses on Anslebridge Road, as there is now no public transport serving any of these businesses.
It is serving, but it's not stopping.
No, and they were there for 60 years and prior to that.
Yeah.
Now, just to continue, we were advised that the whole incentive of removing one of the traffic lanes in the main artery of the main arteries to the city centre was to improve public transport and encourage its use.
Absolutely, yeah.
So the removal of these two bus stops is outrageous and unacceptable and requires immediate attention. Now, this situation is causing a huge amount of stress to businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And we just feel that we have suffered enough disruption already.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, apart from the lane being taken away, our two bus stops that were there forever,
mm-hmm.
have been taken away. So it's a very serious matter.
And I would like
Donna to take note of all that.
Yeah, well, I didn't make the decision about the bus stop.
Donna, who makes the decision?
The decision was made in probably 2017 when By the project engineers and people made submissions.
By Transport for Ireland.
And then there was a big then, you know, where we asked for the bus stops to be replaced in North Strand because there was big gaps there.
Mm-hmm.
And these bus stops, you know, there's... I mean, I don't know what this, I mean, the exact distance, but I know exactly where the bus stop is there, Fairview Park, and you can just, it's only a little small pace down to cross over at Edge's Corner there. So if you're coming on the inward route, on the outward route, it's just on the other side, you know, where the pub is there, you know, so cross them out at Edge's Corner and then, you know, that little crossing there. And also, like, the reason we put the cycleway on both sides, initially mm-hmm. there was going to be just two-way cycleway on one side, was to facilitate people going into the shops on the way home, also because they live off some of those roads. You know, they might live off Windsor Avenue or wherever. But they would stop and they would go into the shops and shop because, I mean, as any other city has shown, like, they're actually campaigning to get more cycleways because generally people on bicycles very easily because they've got bike parking just outside what was Duggan's Jewelries there beside the Butcher's, and people can pop in and buy their products or get to go to the optician and get their eyes done. Important to be able to see properly on your bike, isn't it? I mean, my mother's cousin had opticians, so I know like how it is.
But Donna, you alluded there to Duggan's that was formerly there. Damien Duggan was on this programme saying the reason he gave up.
He's got a new shop in there, some sort of a funny shop, but anyway.
Yeah, well, it's a ubiquitous vaping shop, isn't it?
Well, the one beside it is two pubs or whatever.
Oh, that's a lovely, that's a lovely little coffee shop. Yeah,
yeah. Kenny's around the corner. And that lovely edge of the corner has been done up really nicely and it's now with the new first class
dry cleaners,
and
they're brilliant. Okay, no, but Donna, hang on. I still can't determine who decided to get rid of the bus stops. I presume the only people that are in control of bus stops in Ireland now are the Astro Transport Authority. Don't blame Dublin Bus.
No, the NTA. They know everything. They're rationalising the buses and saying that. I mean, and I don't agree with all their things. I don't agree with them the way they've put the bus now, the 130, onto Talbot Street.
That's disgraceful. I mean, I'm constantly writing to them, but anyway, that's not here nor there. What about this? What did Patricia call it? The up and over overpass. Is that any use, Donna?
No, well, there's a new pedestrian crossing going in there just down from Joey's school. So obviously the kids and Joey's will be able to run over there. But it was always a difficulty for my grandmother. She used to go to the permanent TSB when it was down there.
Because people don't use this up and over. It's the longest up and over in Ireland, isn't it? The widest.
It's an obstacle. I mean, I was campaigning against that when I set up the pedestrian association decades ago.
So the up and over is useless. Dawson Stelfox wouldn't get up on it so high.
There's a new pedestrian crossing going in across there on surface one, just by Joey's school, and then there's another crossing just at Ledger's Corner as well.
Donna is saying this has been flagged nearly 4 or 5 years ago that your bus stops would have been gone. What have you been doing since?
Listen, Damien Duggan, in fairness to him, he took up the gauntlet and he fought as good a fight as any man I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, we wanted the cycleway away from here. We never expected the bus stops to be taken away from what's a very vibrant area. They're very, very popular bus stops. There was always 8 or 10 or more people at each of them bus stops.
Yeah, I know, they're busy bus stops.
We're trying to make progress.
Yeah, but Dermot, hang on. We've just had a local election. Okay, yep. I followed it closely. I think all of the candidates. Sorry, I don't think any one of the candidates mentioned problems with traffic in Fairview. Maybe it's not. There's no votes in it. In fact, Donna, I think you said in your leaflet the roadworks are slightly delayed, but they're working well, and the outcome will be worth the wait. Isn't that generally what you said in your leaflet?
Yeah, I mean, I did. I suppose it's like getting renovations on your house, it's an absolute pain.
But the problem is, Donna, for the family motorists trying to get into town and trying to drop kids and trying to get into work, and they have no alternative but trying two babies.
There's been a lot of misinformation. It's horrific. People are saying it's never going to open up through North Strand again. Dermot, why
didn't you raise it with the councillors? We've just had a local election and it wasn't an issue.
We certainly have been raising it over years, Joe.
Okay,
but at the end of the day, we're all in business, and we're all trying to serve our community. We're all trying to serve our customers. You know, we can't give up a full-time job to campaigning, but we do trust that the powers that be will look after us.
Mm.
Now, the issues we're after pointing out there today, we feel we have been badly let down. And that's not to mention that the goods, the loading bay for this area is now around on Fairview Strand.
Okay, okay.
So the official loading bay for my shop now is around on Fairview Strand, which, as you said earlier, is a bottleneck now because all the traffic has to go
down. It's a laneway, it's a laneway. Patricia, I want to finish up with Patricia. Patricia, you know, one of the reasons that was put forward 6-7 years ago, and it still is, you have to protect the trees, which are nearly as old as Brophy's opticians. You have to protect the trees there on the edge of Fairview Park, and that's why the cycle path couldn't go into Fairview Park. That's why the cycle path is now out, has taken up three lanes for family cars, one lane for the buses.
There's less than one lane for the cycleway on both sides, but it's now down to one lane on both sides
for the family motorists. But Patricia, you have to. The argument was, and the trees won. The trees won, Patricia.
The trees won, and I'm very upset at Donna's reaction to what I have said about the bus stops.
Patricia, tell me what are you upset about?
Also, we are very stressed about everything, and to hear Donna laugh about her mother and the vision and the glasses.
I wasn't laughing about my mother's vision. I understand your business.
Now let Patricia finish, please, Donna.
We are very stressed, and I think that it's an abomination not to make some apology about taking away our livelihoods and our bus stop. People coming to us, they come from Artane, Llangriffin, Sowerth, Raheny, Clontarf. A lot of them are elderly. And I know from going in on the bus myself, where I get off, it's quite a walk from where the bus stop is and where it always was, up near the bridge across from Tesco, down to where to Ansley Bridge Road. And I feel that the conversation has gone towards different parts of Fairview rather than the question, what's in question at the moment, which is Ansley Bridge Road and the livelihoods of the people there and people trying to get to us.
Yeah, okay.
And I would like,
Joe, on that, I would like, I think we could revisit that again. And I think they should come into the consultation meeting and let's look at the footfall and let's look at that. Like, it was a successful campaign to get back the bus stops in through North Strand. And I think, you know, let's look at it. Let's look at it again. I've no problem with supporting them. If there's footfall is down and people need that bus stop, I'm, you know, I've no problem with supporting them. We're here all summer,
Patricia and Dermot, come back to us. After Donna, will you call in soon? You will, I know you will.
I will, of course. I'll call in to Patricia. You know, of course I will. And I mean, I have no problem helping them in whatever way they can.
But is there any?
Make sure their business isn't affected.
I don't mean for you to. Well, unless you know, Donna, is there any councillor that's been recently elected in the Clontarf ward that's against what happened in? It's too late, of course. It's against what happened to Fairview.
No,
I thought that.
No, we're all together on this. We were all there at the launch with the digging up of the councillor resigned and he was
Donna, which digging up was that? Because back in 2021, there was a sod turned. Then they dig a big hole, dug a big hole outside Westwood, then they filled it back in again, then they dug it up again, then they filled it back in again, then they dug a hole at the junction of the Alfieburn Road and the Clontarf Road, then they filled it in again. One of the householders told me this. They filled it in again, they filled it out again, and he went out about 18 months later, and all the lads were standing around the hole singing happy birthday, and he said to them, is it one of the lads' birthday? He says, no, the hole is 2 years old today. Good luck.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
St. Michael's Church in Dublin, founded in 1095. It's seldom been out of news, regarded as one of the best tourist attractions in Dublin. The present structure dates from 1685 and was renovated in 1825, believe it or not. And it's famous for the mummies in the crypt. And you will pay in to see the mummies. You pay €7 at the minute in to see the mummies, and photographs are circulated of skulls and various, the coffins are there and the coffins are open now, and they're one of the few places on these islands where you can actually go in and see mummies, and you can see skeletons of real people. Now, Dr. James Hardy. James, good afternoon. I know you're a retired medical doctor and Church of Ireland member with a degree in theology. James, you say these mummies in St. Michael's, for example, and wherever else there are mummies, should be given a proper religious burial.
Well, I think there are a whole range of worldviews on this question. Thanks for the introduction.
Yeah, okay.
I grew up as a medical student in Belfast, so you're sort of used to body parts and pickle jars and formaldehyde and this sort of idea. Yeah. And I suppose the Enlightenment science view is that we maybe are not to worry too unduly about human remains. But then I spent a phase of life in the Scottish Gaeltacht as a GP in the Hebrides, and sort of had a conversion experience and came to sort of view human remains very, very, very differently. So I think the St. Michael's remains, if science has no further value, perhaps, for the damaged remains, and the human interest value or tourist potential has gone, I think there is an interesting question here in terms of capacity consent. What the original people or their families or the ancient Irish people who were buried in that crypt would have wished, what would they have actually wanted? And I think we have to ask that question, maybe. Would their tradition, their preference, their viewpoint of human ensoulment have preferred a plain, simple earth burial with a Christian rite or a Christian liturgy? So I think it's a really interesting, really interesting question. No easy answer to it all, but that is just a thing which is niggling in the back of my mind, possibly for discussion.
And as you know, it's part of St. Michael's. Up to a couple of hundred years ago, it was the only church on the north side of Dublin. It's now under the tutelage, so to speak, of Christ Church Cathedral. They run it. The crypt in St. Michael's is open every day for tours from 10 to midday, and then in the afternoon from 2 to 4:30. You buy tickets for it. Were you aware that you pay in to see these mummies? By the way, James, am I using? It sounds a bit petty or disrespectful of me to say mummies. What should I be saying? Remains, shouldn't I? Remains.
I think mummies is actually the way that the media have picked it up and described it. And I think also the word mummies is interesting in a different sense. Mm-hmm. If you look at sort of British imperial history, the British sort of militarists, political figures, they collected a range of human remains from across their empire, brought some of these remains back to London to museums and places. And now there's a question raised in modern times by some of the ancestors or the nations where these remains came from, where they would actually like them to be repatriated to China or to Africa or Asia or wherever. So I think in a peculiar sort of way, I think we can maybe ask a parallel question about the St. Michael's remains and, what might the ancestors of those people, their family members, the people themselves, how might they want their remains to have been treated. And I suppose it's a difficult question for the Church of Ireland, which obviously raises some revenue through tourism and the human interest factor. But should we maybe feel slightly uneasy on that topic or question? I mean, the Christian principle, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. How might we feel about it if some of our deceased family members were sort of exhibits in a crypt to generate money?
Well, I know you're posing it as a rhetorical question, but the answer is quite clear, isn't it? None of us would like our relatives displayed, and somebody asked for seven American tourists, or any tourist from anywhere, asked for €7 to go in and have a goo at them, as we say in Dublin.
Well, I suppose that's true. And then you get the other question of the number of generations, the centuries, the distance in time when the remains in consecrated ground or a crypt maybe become less sort of controversial. I think with certain Protestant denominations like the Moravians, they had a certain time frame where a graveyard could be reused and a burial plot could be reused again after so many decades or generations. So I suppose the defence here is that the sort of 700-800 years or whatever, it adds gigantic humanist interest.
Well, the mummified remains, probably a better word. One of the reasons why they are somewhat intact is that the vaults in St. Michael's there in Church Street, contain limestone, which keeps the air dry, creating apparently ideal conditions for preservation. The remains preserved in the vaults have included a 400-year-old body of a nun, a 6.5-foot man properly believed to have been a crusader, a body with its feet and right hand severed, and the Shears brothers, Henry and John, who took part in the 1798 rebellion, which is not too long ago, and the various holders of the title, the Earl of Leitrim, were also interred there. It's probably the closest anyone from Leitrim ever got to Croke Park, but it's still there is a list of people there. And you go back to, I'm sure there's relatives of the Shears brothers still alive. And would they have any hand, act or part or say in whether the remains of their relatives should be on public display for money?
I think that's a fair question. I think that's a completely and totally fair question. And I suppose there's also a sort of associated kind of modern topic of interest, the question of how we treat the dead. Maybe potentially has some impact on how we treat the living, that human dignity covers both. There was a very distinguished chaplain at Princeton University, Ernest Gordon, who was a POW of the Japanese in the Second World War, and he noticed in the POW camp that when people started to treat the dead with respect, it improved the atmosphere and the humanity within the prison camp. So I think there's a broader sort of question here, however old are, whether they're Egyptian, ancient Irish, medieval, whatever. I think there is that question in the mix.
And, well, featured in this programme, one was remains that were in Trinity College that were originally, as you alluded to earlier on, originally used in medical research but no longer useful. And indeed, it was a member of staff in Trinity College who alerted us to this on the programme, and the remains were taken from public view. Then there was a discussion about Charles Bourne, the Irish giant, that came up on this programme about 2 years ago. His remains were on public view in London and in the Royal College of Surgeons of England, and they were, I don't know whether you're familiar with that story, James, but they were upstanding, so to speak. They weren't. They were actually displayed upright to give the image of the man being the tallest giant. But in 2023, and I think a number of his relatives contacted this programme, they were actually removed from public view. So there is a movement that skeletons should not be used for public viewing, or indeed monetary gain.
I think that's a very fair point. And I mean, the other thing is, if you look at the English NHS, there was the Liverpool Alderhay body part scandal, and then there was 2004 legislation in England. And I think there's this modern idea that consent and capacity need to be considered and are critical when we consider the use of body parts, skeletons, the use of bodies for science, and all these kind of questions. So I suppose in one sense, in modern society in Ireland and other places, we've changed our perspective on transplantation, on cremation of the dead. A lot of things have changed, but possibly in a deeper sense, the sort of medieval Catholic idea of ensoulment, that the whole human body in its fullness is sacred.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that idea has a gigantic range of merits, possibly.
I presume the souls of those mummified remains, even though the remains are on open view, I presume the souls have passed over. Ensoulment. Well, what was the word you used? Ensoulment. Ensoulment.
Question of ensoulment, the sort of medieval idea that the whole human body was somehow ensouled and sacred and deserved particular dignity. And then in medieval times, of course, there was the sort of inverse of that, where the rulers or church authorities would sometimes desecrate bodies or put them on public show as a symbol of their you know, that they'd control over them and that the people were sort of lost to perdition or whatever.
Okay, stay with us. We're talking to Dr. James Hardy, and we'll be back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Dr. James Hardy is a former medical doctor, and he's now a theologian, and he was commissioned as a member of the Evangelical commissioned as an evangelist by the Church of Ireland in 2017. Now, Reverend David Pierpoint is Archdeacon of Dublin, based in Christchurch Cathedral. David, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. I'm good, thanks. I hope you're well too. Are you familiar with James's argument?
Well, I only caught the latter half of his discussion.
Well, basically, I paraphrase it in eight words. St. Michael's damaged, the mummies in St. Michael's should finally be afforded proper burial.
Right. Well, yeah. they have a proper burial place. The crypts in here in St. Michael's are in a consecrated plot.
Mm-hmm.
And they were discovered in the early 1700s when the church was being restored and renovated. And when they found out there were crypts underneath the church, a lot of the bodies were mummified by natural causes.
Okay.
They're still laid to rest in consecrated ground, but because it was a unique phenomenon, it was decided back in the late 1700s that they should be at least let people see of this unique phenomenon that people who are laid to rest don't always decay. There's no reasoning behind it. Now, I mean, James, how are you? I know, and in many ways I agree with your argument, but when people are buried in the sacred spot, they remain in that sacred spot, whether it's in a crypt or in the ground.
James, are buried in a sacred spot.
I'm sympathetic to the local clergyman's position, and I appreciate that it's a highly sensitive issue. I do suspect, though, that over recent decades, certainly the British English law and the wider sort of postmodern philosophy around some of these questions may have changed. And I think the display of human remains, wherever they're from, I think, and from whatever vintage they're from, I think it always has sensitivities for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of influenced by the media coverage latterly that the mummies have actually been damaged, maybe beyond being conserved as they are and displayed. So I'm sort of thinking maybe from that viewpoint that if they're damaged beyond their current use, should we maybe consider the possibility of burial at this point? That is just the question.
Okay, well, let's listen. Let's hear what Archdeacon Pierpoint says to that.
Yeah, well, thanks, James. And, you know, in many ways, I agree with you. And in the case of the crusader and the man who's beside him, who was buried alive, who had been completely charred, and then, of course, put water on top of that makes it even worse. And the idea is, and I'm meeting with the Archbishop this afternoon, the idea is that those two bodies will be removed from that particular crypt and reburied in a sealed crypt, which is not in use.
So they won't be in public view?
They won't be on public view.
Okay. Nope. So why... And you mentioned the fact that the unique location, the limestone, and the public...
Yeah.
Like, why should public curiosity be the arbiter on determining whether people... Sorry, whether the deceased get a proper Christian burial?
Well, they did have a proper Christian burial, Joe.
Yeah, but they're not buried.
No, well, they're not buried. They're in a crypt.
Yeah.
And in like those people who are buried under our church in the crypt would have been obviously from Christian backgrounds because they would have had to be part of the most likely part of the Church of Ireland. However, because their families were wealthy, they could afford what in those days was considered an elevated position to have your loved one buried in a crypt. When I say buried in a crypt, they were in a coffins.
Yeah, but they didn't elect to have their loved ones put on public display at €7 a throw.
No, they did not. And that was...
And how, David, how do you feel even about that sentence I've just uttered? Like they didn't...
What do you mean?
Well... The mummies in St. Michael's, the mummified remains in St. Michael's, which are not coffined, and you now say a number of them will be coffined and buried as given.
No,
a
they are all coffined.
Yeah, but they're outside. A number of them are outside the coffins. You're not going in looking at a piece of decaying mahogany. You're going in looking at skeletons. That's what the €7 is for.
Well, it's not even skeletons. It's proper mummified bodies. Yeah, and then.
But in the Protestant tradition, David, do you venerate relics?
No.
And I know they're not. So why?
Well, I suppose because of the curiosity factor, and so many people want to see the fact, you know, see this unique phenomenon of people who have been buried.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, David. I'm sorry for them. Human curiosity leads to people taking photographs of car crashes and putting them up online in 2024. There's a new bill going through the Dáil to stop or to make it illegal.
And that's wrong.
I'm sorry about human curiosity. If you're curious about what mummified remains look like, get on to open your laptop and Google mummified remains.
I know. Can I just get down to a very basic point as well? And we're a very small community here. And I'm not saying it all boils down to pounds, shillings and pence. Mm-hmm. But we receive on average about €100,000 from tourists.
Okay.
And the parish could not survive without that money. But that's just a plain...
That's not just from St. Michael's?
Yes.
€100,000 a year?
A year, yes.
Yeah, God, there is curiosity, isn't there?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's become one of the big tourist attractions.
I know, in Dublin.
I understand where James Hardy's coming from. And as I say, this has been happening since the late 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
And I am... Well, want a better word. I'm the custodian.
Yeah, I can understand that.
This church, and that has been going on before my time, and it's continued on during my time. Now, because of what's happened,
but slavery was going on in the 1700s.
Correct.
It's gone because it was wrong.
Yes.
It was evil.
Yes. Yes, it was evil.
It wasn't what any Christian or any other religion on God's earth. Would ever validate or verify slavery is gone. So why And why do we still have, why are you still earning 100,000 euro a year from people looking at skeletons? And the Shears, yeah, the Shears twins are there, as you know.
Exactly.
Like, if their, yeah, if their descendants came along and said, no, we don't want our... I can't remember anyone. I'm unaware of anyone in a will saying, I know people now, right, I want to be cremated or water cremation or buried. I can't remember any, ever hearing of anyone in a will say, I want my body to be put on public display. My the remains.
Shears brothers, the Shears brothers are not on public display. And neither are Lord Leitrim.
Okay. Who are the remains? There's a Crusader.
There's the Crusader.
And there's a very, very tall.
Oh, he was 6'8" or 6'6".
But if relatives of those people came along and said, we don't want, we never
would. If they came along and said, we don't want this, and they could prove the fact that they are relatives, then we would. Absolutely.
Okay, James Hardy, would that be acceptable to you if relatives of the skeletons on display came along and said, please give them a Christian burial, so to speak? But it's the relatives who will decide, James.
Joe, they've had a Christian burial.
Okay, well, they're not buried.
Well, they've had a Christian.
You don't need you don't need a shovel to dig down and have a goo at them. Pardon my English. James, what do you think of what the Archdeacon has said? If the families of those mummified remains on view, if they were to be come forward and verified through DNA or whatever, and they wanted them buried, is that enough for you, James?
I think if they were to say that it was proven with DNA that they didn't want the bodies to be on display, that was their preference, I think that the Archdeacon and his team would have to maybe take some account of that. But I am sympathetic to what the Archdeacon says. I mean, I can understand that for a church to receive 100,000 euros is useful, and I'm committed to the witness of the Church of Ireland. The Church of Ireland transformed my life from a very dark place.
Okay.
Through an old family Bible or whatever. So I'm sympathetic to the Church of Ireland position. But the one thing I would say is it's fine to accept that £100,000, but then if the Church of Ireland want to make a statement about human dignity around modern topics, say assisted suicide or abortion or topics like that, the fact that we maybe have human bodies on open display and there's a fee charged to go and see them, could that potentially maybe undermine our witness on important modern social issues where we should maybe be making a stand?
Okay.
No, actually, James, you have a very valid point. The money that comes into the parish from the tourists. And it's not just the crypts, by the way. They come into the church, they pray, they see Handel's organ.
Yeah, it's a beautiful location.
From 1742.
But it's not out, in one sense, David. Sorry, I'm stuck for time.
Yeah.
Is that not enough that people can go to this beautiful St. Michael's Church in a historic, probably the oldest part of Dublin, if you move down
north
towards...
Dublin, yes.
Yeah, north
Dublin,
yeah. Well, Dublin began there in the Abbey, off Mary's Lane there. They're going to one of the most historic parts of Dublin. They're seeing an organ that is believed, and he did live down in Abbey Street, George Friedrich Handel. He did actually play on before, as he was writing the Messiah. Is that not enough? Is that not enough for my seven euro?
Sometimes that is enough for people. That's all people want to see. And that's fine. They're still charged in, like going to visit any historic place you're charged in. And it's a very small amount, I have to say, when you compare it to other issues. But Joe, I agree with James, and the parish would never stand in anybody's way if they wished their loved ones to be put like.
Well, can you not put Archdeacon? Can you not put yourself in their place?
I can.
And what would you say if it was one of your relatives?
I wouldn't like it.
So why do it?
Because that's been the history of the parish for 200 and whatever it is years or 300 years.
Okay.
And I'm not breaking that tradition.
Well, someone has to at some stage. Someone has to say, James Hardy.
Someone at some stage is going to say, look, enough is enough. And in fact, when I speak with the Archbishop this afternoon, that's one of the things we'll be discussing.
Okay.
You know, should this just be closed off now to the public?
Okay.
And I won't know. I mean, we'll have to discuss this in greater detail. Mm. But I mean, James,
but you're saying already that two of the mummified remains that were heretofore in public view, they will be buried.
They won't be buried. They will remain in another.
But they will not be. They will not be on. For my €7, I will not be able to see them.
Correct.
Okay. Dr. James Hardy and Archdeacon David Pierpont, thank you so much for your time. Joe at RT.ie.
Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. David Case. David, good afternoon. Are you hoping to visit Ireland soon, David?
I would love to, Joe.
Okay, on your holidays or whatever. I know you're from Mullingar and you're now living in Wales. So why can't you come home?
I can't come home because I have a prescription for medical cannabis.
Okay.
And I have a condition for which cannabis will be available in Ireland.
Okay.
It's a very similar system. Indeed, if I lived in Ireland, the funny thing is that I could travel to the UK with my prescription. It's just that it doesn't work the other way around. My parents are elderly now. I mean, my own health isn't great.
Okay.
If it was, I can assure you I wouldn't be prescribed medicinal cannabis.
Of course.
But it stays in your system for a good while, you know, up to 3 months.
Okay.
And, you know, if you had an accident or whatever, well, obviously, because my prescription was issued in the UK and because Ireland, for some reason, the government won't recognise it, I wouldn't have a medical defence, even though I wouldn't be impaired.
So, in other words, which is very, very topical at the minute here, David, I'm sure you know, because
I'm aware of that.
Any motorist that's now stopped for any motorist that's involved in an accident is automatically drink tested and drug tested. This is the big thing now. And you're saying...
Yeah, well, there's two types of drug tests.
Okay.
There's the one that they do, which is like effectively like an oral one, and that'll show whether or not you have taken cannabis generally within the last 24 hours or so.
Okay.
Now, obviously, with me being a patient, I have to take, you know, I take cannabis on a daily basis. But even if I say I stopped it for 24 hours, there is still a zero tolerance approach. So if the Gardaí, you know, and this is at the discretion of the guards, if they decided that, well, hold on a second, we're not happy with this breath test, come with us to the station, they can ask you, obviously, to do a blood or a urine then.
Okay.
And that's then, you're looking at 90 days for zero on that because it tests a fat. Rather than anything that would be indicative of impairment. So it's an unfair test, and it's unfair that I don't have a medical defence where I would have if I had been in Ireland. And I've been writing to the Irish government for 3 years now and explaining that my dad is sick. Please allow me to travel with my prescription.
Good God.
Please, if anybody, if they could contact Minister Donnelly and ask him for me. I don't know what to do. I have begged. I've begged the Taoiseach. I don't know what I need to do. You know, I'm a solicitor. So do I take on this battle or do I leave it to, you know, the parent of a sickly child who's got a child as well? Because all sorts of people are affected by this injustice.
And medicinal cannabis is not prescribed lightly. Sure, it's not. I mean, there was a campaign in Ireland.
Different. There's a range of conditions for which it's available, and none of them are nice. And we'll say that. And I often hear people say, "Oh, well, why don't you get some on the black market or something like that?" But it's what I take is completely different.
Okay.
For a start, you don't smoke it. It would be illegal to do so. I pick things on what are called terpenes. I know the THC of it. I know the CBD.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
But more importantly, it's irradiated. I'm immune suppressed. If there was any live mold spores, I get a chest infection. So I can't.
And David, you mentioned that because your prescription is not valid in Ireland if you did produce it at a checkpoint or whatever, is if I have a prescription here from Ireland, is that recognised in the UK?
Absolutely.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yes. I emailed the Home Office specifically on this a few days ago.
Good man.
Yeah, and they told me, and you know, everything I say to you is true.
Would it help,
and
David,
I can back everything up.
Can you get an Irish medic, an Irish-based GP, to prescribe medicinal
cannabis? Not to me, because I'm not an Irish resident. Only Irish residents can get it, you see.
Wow.
And only cannabis that is issued by an Irish medical practitioner to an Irish resident can have what is called legal cannabis. Now, what I get and what your patients get will be the same product from the same pharmacy.
Of course.
Yeah, and the same clinic. So it's like, you know, you got aspirin in one country and you can have it, and aspirin in another. And it's, you know, and this is devastating to my family. You know, I have to take this drug every day for pain. Yeah. You know, I'm not well.
How long has it been since you've been home then?
I gave it up for the cannabis for 3 months last year,
wow,
so I could go over and see my parents. But, obviously I had to have steroid injections, and that's okay. I understand that, you know, like it's an alternative treatment. But for 2 months then after, when I got home, I couldn't move. You know, I have a life too.
Yes.
Why should I have to choose between my medical treatment and my family life? It's an injustice.
It is a horrible injustice, given that, as you said, and I said, medicinal cannabis has been a campaign.
Joe, I'm trapped in my body. I'm trapped in my body half the time, you know?
Yeah.
And people go on about, like, driving, yeah? Sure, half the time I can't get in a bloody car.
Yeah. David, I'm so sorry to hear this. I really am.
And please, people, get in touch with the Minister for Health for me, or ask your TDs to. I don't know what else to do. I have begged them.
Okay. David, we'll keep in touch.
Thank
you so much. That was a very, very powerful contribution.
I
know it was very short, but it's very powerful, David.
If anybody in RTE wants to get in touch with me and wants to know more about medical cannabis in general, or
with your
any
permission,
aspect,
please
get in touch.
Okay, David, please keep in touch, and the campaign is there. Why is a prescription for medicinal cannabis that's written in Ireland acceptable in the UK, but a prescription for medicinal cannabis written in the UK is not admissible in Ireland? Owen McLaughlin produced. Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Step into summer with our new curtain designs and colours. Explore our latest designs in store or online.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.